It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It's a good day to talk about Iron Man 3. I am your host, Mac. Sadly, Chris can't be with us this episode, but don't worry. He'll be back for next week's episode to reclaim his title. Joining me as always are Jalen.
What's good?
And Duncan.
In a world where Tony Stark does voiceovers.
Today, we are also joined by a very special guest, friend of the pod, Andrew Roberts, an aspiring filmmaker from Australia. Andrew is here with us today to talk about one of his favorite MCU films. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Do you want us to tell us a bit about your background or where we can follow you to keep up with your latest projects?
Thank you so much for having me. So I am a filmmaker and I'm also kind of a film critic. I write for a site called Nova Stream, which you can check out online. Yeah, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a screenwriter. I've been learning at film school for the past 5.5 years and just graduated. So that's fun. And yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at AndrewFilms15. I just talk about whatever nonsense I feel like and whatever I'm watching about online.
Well, we are glad to have you, Andrew, as we discuss the first film in Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Iron Man 3. This is your weekly Tuesday bonus episode of GDT, where we talk about superhero movies and TV shows and go through the MCU movie by movie. Previously, we did The Avengers, the final film in Phase 1, and next week, we will do the second Thor movie, Thor: The Dark World. Here on GDT, we talk about movies we love and interview independent filmmakers. Every Friday, Duncan and our other host, Gardner, host the full episode of our show where they interview an indie filmmaker or someone else involved in the filmmaking process. Our Monday bonus episodes, hosted by Niatifa, are currently paused, but will resume shortly. In the meantime, if you want to listen to any of the previous interviews with the cast and crew of the GDT short film titled Nostalgia, check out our back catalog of Monday episodes. Then on Thursday, we have a regular bonus episode where Gardner and Duncan talk about a new TV show, new movie, something relevant, or talk to a guest about a movie of their choice. This week, the Thursday episode is a bonus episode with our MPU hosts, us, plus Chris and Gardner, where we discuss season 3 of The Boys up to the most recent episode, Herogasm. Those are all of our weekly episodes. That's what we do here at GDT. And now it's time to talk about Iron Man 3. Quick spoiler warning, though. Spoilers for Iron Man 3 and spoilers for the entire MCU. Anything MCU related is fair game. So if you're worried about any movies or shows being spoiled, turn this off now. Go get caught up and then get back to us. For everyone else, that was your spoiler warning for Iron Man 3 and the entire MCU. So, Iron Man 3 was released in 2013. It stars Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, Don Cheadle, Guy Pearce, Jon Favreau, Ben Kingsley, and many more. The movie was directed by Shane Black, who also co-wrote the screenplay with Drew Pearce. That's a little background, and now let's get into our opening thoughts. Andrew, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So, I adore this movie. This is my second favorite movie in the MCU. I love it just because it is a Shane Black film. It's a Shane Black film within the Marvel universe. It's of its time where Feige kind of would let go of the reins a bit more to the filmmakers. It's kind of the last time that he really let an auteur make a film until Chloe Zhao and Sam Raimi came back in, you know, over the past year. So you get this Iron Man film that is almost unadulterated Shane Black, and it's great. Like, it's so much fun and it's so interesting and it's so perfect for that point in time. You know, you've got this intense yet entertaining analysis of PTSD and dealing with trauma, but also dealing with what it is to be a hero dealing with trauma, the obsession and the struggle to deal with mental health while also dealing with having to be a hero. It's just a blast. I loved it when I watched it the first time. I've only become more in love with it over the years. I just think it's awesome.
Jalen?
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything you said, Andrew. I didn't realize how much I enjoyed this movie. I definitely did not remember the movie since the last time I saw it, but I did love how they focused on Tony's mental health, especially after the events of the Avengers. And it focuses on his PTSD, anxiety, as well as highlighting his panic attacks just due to that large threat that happened. He finally found out in the Avengers about aliens or beings from other worlds that are able to come to Earth. At first, he thought he would just have to deal with normal like villains on Earth, but now it's a whole nother layer added to that, which adds on to his paranoia, which was already displayed in the other two Iron Man movies as well. And during this movie, they do reference a lot about his armor basically being like a shield for him or a defense mechanism, or you could say it as like a safety blanket in a way. So I like how they kind of reference that, as well as how this movie showed how different Tony Stark is from all the other movies that he was in. It kind of showed like a whole evolution or change of this new hero that he became to be throughout the rest of the MCU.
Duncan?
Yeah, this is almost definitely only the second time I've watched this film. So I think since theaters, I haven't seen it. And that's not to say that I was not into it when I first saw it. I honestly don't remember my reaction the first time. But even Avengers, when we did that last week, I think I mentioned that it might have been the first time since theaters I had even watched that one. Because I think at that point in my movie going career, I wasn't really rewatching a lot of films in general. And for the MCU, the rewatches came later on when it was more important to remember stuff, for example. And I think I figured, oh, Avengers, Iron Man 3, I don't need to rewatch like up to that point when I'm studying for Infinity War and Endgame, for example. Because I'm like, oh, I remember, like, they get together. It's the core group of Avengers and they get together and, you know, we know where they go from there. It's kind of like, I think my rewatch has probably started with Age of Ultron in the past. But now that I'm going back to these ones for the first time, it seems to be each movie is, I don't want to speak for you guys, but we have expressed a general sentiment of being surprised by how much we do like the rewatches of these. And again, not to say that we were thinking we were going to hate all of them going into them, but it's just more so that we appreciate it to a higher degree than I think we were expecting. And that's how I feel about this one, just like I felt about a lot of them. I'm not that well acquainted with Shane Black. I have seen The Nice Guys, but other than that, I don't think I've seen anything else he's directed. These two would be the only two. And I do like it, but I don't know if I know his style enough to point it out as Andrew is, but hopefully that'll come out in the discussion. We'll talk about what that means, that it's a Shane Black film. I do think it works as an Iron Man film for sure, telling his story. It's got all the elements. Tony Stark feels like Tony Stark, and obviously a lot of that is Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, but overall I think it's telling a story that makes sense in Iron Man's career at this point. Like we were saying, he's coming to grips with the events of the first Avengers. He's got PTSD. It's dealing with mental health and anxiety and stuff like that, which to me seemed a little bit ahead of its time. On top of that, I think it's got just some cool elements. Like, I know Iron Patriot's kind of a joke throughout it, but I think his suit just looks cool. I like seeing a war machine that's kind of like a Captain America crossover. It's like, what if Iron Man and Captain America were mixed together kind of deal? So I think that's just a cool element to happen in this. I always just like the more versions of the superheroes in different suits. I'm always into that stuff. It's a little bit like the slop that I'm eating up, because it's not really a crazy storytelling technique, but give me a new suit each movie. I know it's like to sell toys half the time, but I don't care. I like seeing them in new stuff. So the Iron Patriot stuff was cool for me. And I also think it sets up where we're going in the MCU. For example, in Avengers 2, because I think you see what kind of leads Tony to want to be in that position to a certain degree, where he's, like we said earlier in the Avengers episode, trying to build a suit of armor around the world. So I think it works in the story of the MCU as well as with Tony Stark's story, and I'm down to get into the specifics of what does work.
Yeah, I have to agree with everything all of you said. I also don't know Shane Black that well, so I can't speak on that part of it, Andrew. Like, I know you mentioned like this is a Shane Black film, and like I just said, I'm not super familiar with his work. But what I do like about this movie that surprised me, well, number one, I forgot how much I really enjoyed watching this movie. But normally I'm really critical of superhero movies that don't feel like superhero movies. And while we did get a lot of Tony in the suit, and like I think that's a major component of this film and really a driving force behind a lot of his mental health issues and his need to create so many suits for XYZ, I think that this movie, there were a lot of moments where we saw him without the suit and he was Tony Stark, but also Iron Man. And I think that's a big theme of this movie too. It's like he is Iron Man with or without his suit. And that kind of plays into this arc that we see throughout the movie, especially coming from the beginning where we get a quick flashback of him and his Playboy days to where we are then in the movie, and it almost feels complete in that regard. But aside from like the overall themes, this movie was so fun to watch. I enjoyed all the characters in it. I forgot that it was Guy Pearce that played Killian, so that was fun to see. But yeah, overall, like, this movie was really entertaining. It was emotional in a lot of ways, and I know I feel like I always say it's emotional, I can't help it, but yeah, it was really good to watch, and I think I enjoyed it better than the second Iron Man, and I really enjoyed that movie too. So I mean, honestly, I'm not hard to please when it comes to these, but it was really fun to watch, and I'm glad that this is what we get to discuss today. All right, now that we've given our opening thoughts, let's get into the full discussion of the movie. Starting with the opening, we get a really brief monologue from Tony as we see several of his suits exploding. We're not exactly sure what's going on yet. Obviously, something's gone down, but that's all we get. And then we turn to Switzerland in 1999, where Tony is back in his Playboy era. He's with Maya Hansen, who we immediately find out is a scientist. She's working on some really cool technology. They go back up to Tony's suite with Happy, and that's where we really get to see evidence of the kind of work that she's doing. The plant breaks off, it grows back, but there are some mishaps, hence it's still in the works. During that same time, we're also introduced to Aldrich Killian, played by Guy Pearce, and Tony's not super into him. Like, he thinks he's cramping his style. He rejects his offer to join his company, AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics, and he just leaves him on a rooftop, basically. Tony's not interested. He just wants to hook up with Maya and learn a bit more about her. He leaves in the morning, and then we are back in present day. So what are your thoughts on this opening scene as we're introduced to two of the antagonists and seeing this older version of Tony?
Yeah, like, I like the way that you put it, Maka, which was, it's a nice sort of introduction to seeing how Tony was before that Playboy day, that sort of the character we were introduced to at the start of Iron Man 1, and then jumping to, and we'll get to it, but when we jump to the present day, we get to see how he's evolved. And there's a lot of narrative weight it's pulling. You know, you've got Killian and you've got Maya being introduced and Extremis being introduced, but it's just character-wise so rooted in, well, here's who he was, here's who he is now, and here's what we're going to start laying out the pavement for the film. We get to see the full evolution within a 20-minute block, or at least the beginnings of the full evolution in a 20-minute block. And it's very lovely. It's fun. And you get to see Tony being a bit of a dick again, which he always is a bit of a dick, but to a degree where we haven't seen since Iron Man 1. Killian is obviously very, you don't want anything to do with him. Shane Black is clearly knowing what he's doing. He's clearly wanting to make Killian the most. You want to be on Tony's side where you go, maybe not. And is it necessarily the cleanest way to do it? Not necessarily. It's kind of a bit off, but you understand it and you get the point. The whole Maya thing is very easily, you know, set up. You understand Tony's history as a bit of a playboy. So you understand that their relationship is melded by Tony's wanting to sleep with her. It makes sense. But you get this exposition drop that just kind of works. So we can understand Extremis as we're moving into the film. It's very clean. It's very nice. And it's fun, all the while being character-based narrative propulsion.
I definitely agree with all of that. I love the monologue of the flashback, and it does build suspense and sets up the storyline in like a concise way. So everything, seeing all of that flashback, is kind of self-explanatory instead of someone just talking about something that happened in the past, which is also a thing that happens in superhero movies. It's just like they'll verbalize it, their motives and everything, but not be able to show it on screen. So it was kind of nice to kind of see Killian's like viewpoint and what actually happened to him to set him up to be a villain against Iron Man. And I also liked how Tony Stark stated in his monologue that he basically creates his own demons, which he actually does. It's a thing throughout all the movies, other people trying to steal his armor or recreate his armor or keep up with his technology in order to use it as evil, which is a way that he creates his demons, as well as how he treats people as well back then. And I do agree with you, Andrew, on the contrast between how he used to be to where he is now. Rewatching the movie, I had to think about how these movies come out over time throughout the year. So sometimes you need a little bit of a reminder of how someone was before, so then you can see his growth on screen, just a little reminder. So I like how they did that. And I definitely appreciated that entire monologue and flashback, as well as the post-credit scene, how it tied together. That made me enjoy it even more, like him talking to Banner.
Yeah, I think that if I remember correctly, one of the main criticisms of this film was that people felt like Tony had regressed. And as I rewatched, I really don't understand that complaint. And maybe it comes from a little bit of confusion over the first scene being in 1999, which they make very clear various times throughout the film. But maybe if you thought that was more present, you'd be like, oh, this feels like the old Tony. And I can understand, because like you said, Andrew, he's always a dick. He's gotten to a point where he's not as selfish. And we've seen and we've talked about on our previous episodes how he got to that point and how he's learned certain things. But he's not at the end of his arc, first of all. And second of all, he's dealing with a new problem. It's a PTSD movie. It's a movie about, like we said, mental health and stuff like that. And I do think it's interesting to go back and see him in the Playboy days before we got to see him. It's akin to kind of like the Star Wars stuff, where the shows, for example, the Clone Wars animated show, went back and showed people a lot of stuff that wasn't shown between episode 2 and 3. And they were like, oh, well, there was a whole war going on that, you know, we'd like to see. And they kind of filled in those gaps. And this is obviously way lesser of a degree of that, but it's cool to see Tony in his prime, his game spitting prime, just like it would be cool to see Obi-Wan, for example, in his prime. And that's a part of why just the prequels in general were cool, because you're like, all right, well, we saw old man Obi-Wan. These prequels are going to be focused on young Anakin and Obi-Wan. I'm making Star Wars references because I will make them whenever I can, because I, as our listeners know, I like Star Wars. But I do think that it's cool in general to see stuff like that, where this is our fourth film with Tony now already in 5 years. And we've grown with this character already a lot. And it's fun, like we said, to go back and see the roots of this character and kind of where we started in Iron Man 1. It's a nice refresher of that. And not really a refresher, but I think it's more just fun for the audience. And it's cool to see that. And I think you're not on his side almost, though, because I think you acknowledge that he's stuck in his ways that you don't want him to go back to. And like, I think the audience acknowledges the fact that he's grown and we don't necessarily want him to be like that. Although, like I said, in The Avengers, I think when he's being a dick to Captain America, for example, I'm laughing my ass off at him. I'm like, yeah, you just roasted him, even though he's being maybe immature and definitely petty at the time. But so is Captain America in that movie. And we obviously talked about that as well. But I think you're supposed to feel like he goes too far, which we did mention with Aldrich. And he could just dismiss him without leaving him on the roof, for example. And he could be nicer about it. And he doesn't have to necessarily invest in AIM, even though he probably would be mad either way if the answer was no. But I think part of what turns him into the villain, and I think that's kind of a big aspect of at least these first two phases, maybe, is that a lot of what Tony's going against is kind of self-created. And a lot of what the Avengers even go against is Tony created. Obviously, the biggest example is Avengers Age of Ultron, which we've hinted at multiple times already, and we're going to get to eventually, and we'll discuss it then. But other than that, even later down the line, we see WandaVision. It's brought up that Tony's creating villains from the get-go, and there's various other examples, but even in his own trilogy, it seems like he's the one that's causing them. Like in the first movie, it was his weapons again, then he made the move to clean energy instead of weapons, and obviously that's been a big part of Stark industry since then in the films. But again, it's all like Tony created. Like if he wasn't as big of a dick, then you don't have Killian being this villain, probably, in my opinion. So I like this setup for sure.
Yeah, I like their use of skipping from kind of the future, because that scene where the suits are getting destroyed, that's setting us up to know that that's going to happen and we're hooked immediately. And then it skips all the way back to 1999 to give us like a preface of everything we need to know as to what's led to what's about to go down in this movie. And I think that was a great way for them to do that, both hook us and give us everything we needed to know about our two antagonists, like within 10, 15 minutes. I don't know the exact time, but I love that. I loved seeing Tony back in his Playboy kind of era. And I know in previous episodes, I've kind of shared my disdain for that part of Tony, just because I know that deep down he has a good heart and it's hard to watch him be an asshole. But no, I really enjoyed it. He was fun. He was charismatic. And it was interesting to watch. I don't know if you guys caught it, but Jensen was in that scene. He briefly meets him at the New Year's Eve party. And it's like, you just dismiss this guy that would in nine years would literally save your life. But I think that's just another part of how Tony's past is always coming in to play into his future. It's like a repetitive theme for him, like you guys had mentioned. But yeah, these were great scenes. It was interesting to see how what seems like something trivial to him as dismissing Killian, like not paying him any attention, just seems like really trivial to him. Like it's not going to mean anything in the future. And then boom, it's like all of Tony's actions do actually have consequences. And that's just kind of, I think we've talked about this in like the first movie, but he just comes from such a place of privilege that he doesn't even recognize that his actions do have consequences and he's never had to deal with that before. And this is just another example of how that's what it's like for Tony. He can just do whatever he wants, get away with whatever he wants. And there's always somebody else to pick up the pieces. But with power comes responsibility. We all know that. And this is one of those instances where Tony's now Iron Man and he created an enemy back when he had no real power. And now he's facing consequences of that. And he has to like step up to the plate and be responsible for the person that he like pretty much created. And I think these scenes were a great way of showing that that's what's continuing to happen with Tony. And after we're in Switzerland in 1999, we get back to present day with Tony as he's tinkering in his garage. He's working on a new suit. He's trying to get the suit to come to him versus actually having to come to a suit, which is like pretty innovative. Like you never know what situation you're going to be in, wink, wink, where that's going to come in handy. He's really going at it though. Like Jarvis mentions that he hasn't slept in like 72 hours. Like he is obviously going through something. It's really rough. Then we get to Killian, who's coming to see Pepper at her office. They obviously have some kind of work history together. Pepper's not expecting him to look so shiny and brand new because the last time she saw him, he did not look so shiny and brand new. Happy calls Tony because Happy is now head of security. And he's like, Tony, you have to see this. Like, what's going on? He's showing her his brain. Tony's not that fazed by it. He's pretty confident in his relationship with Pepper, or so we think. Killian offers Pepper an option to get involved with his project. She turns him down. And then she comes back home. Tony's there. But instead of Tony greeting her, Pepper's met with his suit. And she goes downstairs, sees that Tony is actually not in the suit, as she suspected. And they go on to argue that his work life is really affecting their relationship. And things aren't super good for them right now. Eventually, they go to bed. And his suit almost hurts Pepper in her sleep because he's having some kind of attack while in his sleep. He's not exactly sure what's going on with him at this point, but clearly whatever's happening to him is affecting not only his health, both physical and mental health, but also his relationship with Pepper and her own physical safety. What did you guys think about getting a glimpse into Tony struggling?
I think it's like just the perfect sort of setting the stage of Tony is obsessed. You know, he doesn't have Stark Industries to worry about anymore. We now understand that Pepper is taken full control as CEO. That's fine. Tony can now just focus on being Iron Man, but he is obsessed with building these suits. And there's that joke of Pepper asks him, what is this, Mark 15 or something? I can't remember the actual line. And he goes, yeah, something like that. And it's actually 42. And it's just, we just see Tony just purely focused on his mission. He can't work out his way to not be focused on it. It's disregarding Pepper to a degree. It's disregarding his own well-being. We're watching this aftermath of everything. And it all plays into his PTSD, even if he doesn't realize it. Yeah, he doesn't realize it's to do with his own anxieties. But it's all to do with the fact that he fought aliens. Aliens exist. They invaded Earth. Well, what can we do? I have to find ways to save the world. It's my job. What else can I do? And it's just pure obsession. The whole Killian thing is, I think, really funny, and it's played really well. He's showing her his brain line is really funny and really well delivered by Favreau. I think this movie, I think I'm going to say it over and over again, but we're just going to watch really good narrative work built in with perfect character work. We're just watching really perfect blend of how character and narrative work together to further the story. And not that that's just a Shane Black thing, but Shane Black's really good at character and narrative and just everything being character motivated and character driven and every beat having a narrative purpose. It's so concise and it's so well constructed and just, it's also just really fun. It's really good. There's so much funny stuff in this. It's so, as much as we're watching Tony be obsessed, we have the bit where the suit doesn't work properly. It's great sequence. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I like all of this scene. I love the scene when he was suiting up. It was pretty cool and funny at the same time. I know normally in the past few movies, the suit up scenes were just like cool, like scenes. But this one was kind of funny, showing how you just said before, the suit wasn't working right and how it was basically like attacking him, making all this mess and everything. And it was just something that he needed to perfect. And it also kind of showed how like he's not all together himself. If his suit's not together and working properly, he's not working properly mentally as well. So I kind of like pulling a parallel from that. And also the scene showing like Pepper being the CEO, having full control over the company, while Tony is just a hermit at home. Well, a hermit in his work area, just building suits all night, all day. And Pepper's paying the bills, basically. And I'm just like, that's nice to see a strong woman, but like, still, I feel like he should still have some type of input or help her out or pay attention to her. Like y'all said, he was basically neglecting her a lot due to being obsessed over putting a suit of armor around the world. And it's like, you have to like help her out too. And I thought it was pretty funny, the scene you were just talking about where Aldrich Killian finally comes in and is basically trying to like sweet talk Pepper by showing her his brain and everything. And then Happy is just over there in the corner like, you got to come here. Like, you got to see this right now. Like, come get your girl. But I thought that was pretty funny. And yeah, I just enjoy like these scenes overall as a whole. And also it was freaky to see Tony Stark like have a nightmare or whatever, and then his suit comes and saves him, and instead of like standing guard, is basically like attacking Pepper, the woman that he loves. So it kind of shows like how his actions of trying to be a superhero and be obsessive over that is actually hurting her, like physically as well as emotionally, of that neglect. So I did enjoy all of those scenes.
Yeah, I think this part's interesting for how it sets up the relationship and where it is now between Pepper and Tony. And I think it's a pretty core part, not only of this movie, but of the trilogy, is that relationship, obviously. But I do like where we get to with it in this movie and the closing resolution between the two of them that we will discuss when we get to that point. But I do like the scene with Aldrich coming in as the new version of himself, where he's obviously very handsome and is surprising Pepper with his appearance, and Happy himself describes him as a handsome man. So almost a situation that you would expect Tony to feel threatened by. And like we mentioned, he's not really fazed by it, and Happy's more concerned about it, which is interesting on a rewatch, obviously, since you know what ends up being of Killian. Although I was thinking it is kind of telegraphed throughout it, like, what would this character be if not the villain? And I do think the misdirection is not bad where we go with the Mandarin and stuff, but I think it's obvious that Killian's involved in the same way that Sam Rockwell was involved. You have the business type, and then a brute force is kind of what you're expecting in this, with the Mandarin being similar to Whiplash in that sense, I guess. But obviously we get the misdirection there, and I think Ben Kingsley is terrific always, so we'll get to his character. But I do appreciate that scene a lot. I think it's funny, like we were saying, and also well done, and tells you about the characters. I think, like you were saying, Andrew, it's good character work for sure, and also interesting. Like, that's the most important thing about these movies, they have to be fun, and that's what we've said, they are fun. Or this one, at least, that we're talking about right now, is working on the fun level, which I think you're watching a Marvel movie, you definitely, that's got to be up there in your priorities, is that it's enjoyable and fun to watch. And then I think obviously the other stuff is important as well, but that's probably secondary to your just flat out enjoyment level, because it's a superhero movie. You're here for a spectacle. You're here to be wowed. You're here to see some crazy shit. You're not here to not see Iron Man do Iron Man stuff, for example, which you get. So I think it works on that level, which is an important level for any Marvel film.
Yeah, I think my favorite part about these little snippets of scenes, it's definitely the character interactions. And I think they're so funny, like seeing Happy so serious in his role as head of security. It's just really, really fun to watch. Pepper's like, since you became head of security, complaints have gone up 300%. And he doesn't realize that that's not a good thing. He thinks he's taking his job. I mean, he is taking his job overly serious. And it's just really funny to watch him be so giddy about that and their interaction and like their relationship and his relationship with Tony. It's really humorous. And I really enjoy getting to see these interactions, especially because other than that, like I think Happy's John Favreau's part in the movie is like pretty minimal after that. So yeah, I loved seeing them all interact with each other. Tony is really hard to watch because it is really heartbreaking to see him struggling. Clearly, he's experiencing PTSD from the New York attacks, if not being Iron Man in general, but definitely from New York. And it's really causing strains throughout all of his relationships. And getting this really brief glimpse into it, it is really hard to watch. And how is he going to overcome it? Is he going to overcome it? Like, we don't know as an audience yet what's really going to happen. And all we can do is like trust that the people in Tony's life are going to recognize that he's struggling and be there for him and support him in whatever way he needs.
I think that's the nice thing about the way that Pepper is portrayed, especially in this section, where she doesn't come home being like, you're neglecting me, except for like when she walks down and goes, are you serious? She's obviously looking after herself, but she really understands. Like, she doesn't go at him. She doesn't blow up at him, except for when something directly happens to her. And even further on, like when, and we'll get to it, but when she drops the bags from the second floor, it's not like a, I'm getting out of here, what the hell are you doing? It's a, we're getting out of here, this is ridiculous, you're putting yourself on the line as well as me. It's never about just her being like, this isn't working, this is insanity. It's, you're hurting yourself and we need to be dealing with this.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of we. They're working together as a unit versus everyone thinking in more of a selfish way, you know? And I think that's something that I've just seen and read about relationships. You tackle a problem as a we versus you're doing this wrong. No, you're doing this wrong. It's like, we need to work this out together as a unit. But jumping into the rest of the movie, clearly throughout this, we're getting news reports of Mandarin attacks. Tony wants to know what's up. He meets up with Rhodey to discuss it. He wants the inside scoop. And Rhodey tells him there's actually been 9 attacks, but the world only knows about 3 of them. So something's clearly going down. While they're talking, Tony has an anxiety attack when they bring up New York. He doesn't exactly understand that it's an anxiety attack. He leaves. Rhodey has to tell him, I think this is what you just experienced. So Tony leaves. He just has to get out of that situation. Meanwhile, Happy is hunting down the bodyguard that was with Killian while he was in the office with Pepper. He realizes like the guy's just not right. Something's going down. He follows him. And that's when Happy becomes a victim of one of the Mandarin attacks himself. We as the audience know that something more serious is going down there and it's not just a regular terrorist attack. But at this point, nobody else really knows what's going on. Tony doesn't know what's going on. Tony's really pissed off. Clearly, his friend's in the hospital. The news anchors are hounding him down outside. He, in a state of rage, gives out his address. He's like, come find me. This isn't over. And obviously, you give a terrorist your address, they're going to come find you. They're going to hunt you down. And that's what happens. But right before that, Maya Hansen from back in 1999 shows up. She's there to talk about something. We don't really know yet because before we can understand why she's there, shit goes sideways and Tony's home's destroyed by Killian's bodyguard. Ergo, Killian is somehow involved with the Mandarin. Something's going down. Tony does happen to survive the attack, but that's all we know by the end of it. We're not sure where he is at this point once the attack goes down. Walk me through what you guys think of the scene, the action in it, whatever your thoughts are.
Well, I want to talk about the newscasts, the Mandarin videos first, because I find that bit really interesting. It's so, you know, it's this 2013, so we're still dealing with the war on terror, and it's so much war on terror imagery. It's very pointedly war on terror imagery, the way that the video is constructed and the way that the Mandarin is set up as that kind of warlord. It's, I think that's a really interesting usage of a very specific point in time. And we'll get into, I won't talk about the twist yet, but I think there's something to be said about how that twist plays into the way that the film uses that kind of imagery. So I think that's really interesting. I always forget that you can kind of work out that Killian has something to do with the Mandarin this early by the bodyguard and by the extremist stuff. It all comes together really quickly. And I always kind of forget that it's not like some midpoint drop. It's right there. It's all all the information is there. I think that's to the film's benefit because it's not set up as a mystery. It's not set up as some kind of thing to be dropped or something to be unpacked. It's just kind of, okay, here's the characters you've seen before. Here's, you know, these people have linkages. You know, these people have linkages. There we go. You can pull it together pretty quickly. So I think that's really strong because it doesn't need to be that complicated. Love Happy's little side quest thing. I think that's giving Happy something more to do in this movie is really nice, especially considering Favreau didn't direct this one, at which I was just looking, he was meant to be doing a Magic Kingdom movie. That's why he didn't direct this for doing that for Disney, which eventually became led into him doing Jungle Book. So I thought that was interesting. And I think that's part of why he's kind of out of commission for the majority of the film. I think that, yeah, the Chinese theater scene is excellent and tense. And, you know, you're watching, Shane Black just sets out the layout really easily. You know, you've got Happy, you've got the henchman, you've got the soldier. You just put it together so quickly. And as everything starts to fall apart, you just go, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And it's just perfect kind of thriller construction. It's really nice and it comes together really easily. Then you've got the house attack. And I think this is one of my favorite action scenes of this franchise. I think it's just really iconic in so many ways. I remember, it's the one that I remember the most. I have the Lego set from this set piece. I think it's really fun. Like Pepper gets a chance to go into the suit, foreshadowing rescue, even if that wasn't the initial plan. It's very clearly got that rescue. It's invoking rescue from the comics. So you've got that. That's really fun. And she gets to protect Tony for a bit. I think Tony calling the Mandarin to his house is really interesting. You know, building up this set piece is really interesting and just very perfect Tony Stark arrogance. You know, we've got this hero who is personally affected now and is personally impacted by the Mandarin's attacks. He's going to take it personally. He's going to do something extravagant because that's his ego. He can't help it. Even if he's doing it for the right reasons, he can't help but bring it all onto him. So you get this excellent set piece and it all, the imagery is incredible. The explosion of the suits, I think this is really fun. I think this is really fantastic and it's beautiful spectacle and it's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, for this sequence, I did like how, like you said, we were able to kind of put the connections of who the villain was, or at least who was behind the extremist attacks in a way. Definitely from the opening scene with the flashback at the closer to the end of it, that plant exploding. That's exactly what I thought of as soon as the terrorist attack happened. So I kind of put two and two together pretty quickly. And it was good to give Happy like something to do during the movie, basically, because he's like, well, I'm supposed to be Tony Stark's bodyguard, like Iron Man's bodyguard. Like I'm trying to get that purpose and complete something himself. And in my mind, I'm like, just go ahead and get this man a suit. But yeah, I did like that investigation, Happy trying to take initiative with that. And the suspense of the whole terrorist attack was pretty crazy. And I love the action in that. And also what you were saying about the Mandarin basically doing these broadcasts and basically giving everybody a warning about his attacks and putting fear into society. That kind of correlates with like how the things were in the other Iron Man movies, where Iron Man will always be on TV, publicity, doing interviews and stuff. So I like how they kind of kept that theme, but like reversed it with the villain instead. And I did honestly think it was pretty stupid for Tony Stark to give out his address. I'm like, you just want to die. But I do see that that was probably him basically protecting his ego, knowing that he's going through PTSD and anxiety and trying to like prove to himself that he's still a hero and overcompensate for that. And also, I feel like since it's not an alien attack or a threat from another world, he feel like he can handle it on his own with ease. So it kind of like shows how cocky he is now that he's not thinking about that alien threat. It gives him something else to focus on that he feels like he can handle in this movie. And the scene where the Mandarin does attack and basically destroys his home, I do like how he basically put Pepper and Maya before himself instead of like him needing the suit to like handle everything, as you saw prior whenever he had that anxiety attack when him and Rhodey were talking. He just goes straight to the suit and then he's able to calm down after that. This time he was able to basically like take action and give the suit to Pepper, put her and Maya first, make sure they're safe before taking the action and, you know, doing his hero-esque task. And that kind of showed his growth as a character as a whole throughout the past few movies and even in this movie alone. So those were good scenes to me as a whole.
Yeah, I definitely like the stuff with Rhodey. I already mentioned that the Iron Patriot stuff gets me, even though it's a little bit of a cheap nationalistic type thing. I'm not into that kind of deal all the time, but I just think the suit looks cool. That's the extent of my caring about Iron Patriot. I do like that we've talked a little bit about, and it's dipping its toes in these themes, but the past Iron Man movies and some of the overall MCU films to this point, I think, and we've mentioned, have been a little bit anti-imperialist / anti-war to a very minor degree, I would say, because they're not saying anything groundbreaking. And I'm not saying that as a huge fault to them. I'm just saying they're very base level probably takes on those subjects, but at least their aspects, I guess, is what I'm saying. I think it's a positive to at least be trying to a certain degree to have that in there. And I think, and maybe I'm reading into this, but the idea of Iron Patriot being kind of mocked throughout the film, I think is a little bit making fun of that idea a little bit to a certain degree. And again, not any groundbreaking things, but it's poking fun. And I think it's a fun aspect. And it makes me feel better about liking the suit because I'm like, all right, well, it's being depicted in a little bit of an ironic way anyway. So it's not like they're like, oh, look how badass this America Iron Man is. It's kind of like, look how silly it is they went with Iron Patriot, which is, I think, kind of funny. It is a little bit funny in the same series that has Captain America as an unironic character. It's like, what? How are you making fun of Iron Patriot when Captain America is a literal guy? But I'm not shitting on Captain America. I like his films to a certain degree. I have said that I am an Iron Man guy in the past, so I've made fun of Captain America being a little bit like a narc, but I'm on a little bit of a digression, but I'll give any opportunity the chance to mention Iron Man over Captain America. But I do like that aspect. I think it's just cool to see Iron Patriot. Like I said, I'm a sucker for new suits, so that's also fun with Iron Man and all the different marks getting different versions of the suits and different ways he can put them on is always fun. There's a lot to play with in the superhero genre, and I think it's fun when the creatives behind it actually dabble in what they can push with those stuff and like where can we do with that. And I think, not to go too far into the future of the MCU, but like characters like Doctor Strange are perfect examples of somewhere you can really go crazy places with, and you can go a lot of fun directions with that, and there's a lot of avenues that are open because you have a character like that. And I think they to a certain degree do that, and they do that with Iron Man, definitely, I think, pushing what would be fun to see with him and see different versions of his suit and stuff like that. And we obviously get like the nanotechnology later on, but the whole thing that we mentioned already with the saving of Pepper when that bomb does go off, and the kind of slow-mo shot of, I think it hits her hand first, is the first part of the suit that comes onto her, and it's just like, okay, yeah. And you see Tony's priorities too. It's the suit is going to her, not him, which is cool. It is funny seeing, not that you question the decision making at all, but it's funny because the other woman is there. It's not just her being saved, Pepper in the suit, but then it's the thud of not just Tony, but the other woman too. And it's like, wow, she probably just got messed up by that hit as well. And she's not a superhero like training, you know, all the time. She's just your average scientist who's probably not working out to be taking the hits that Tony is, for example. But I think the whole scene is cool. It's fun where there's the helicopter surrounding him. He's like, I thought we like had this locked down. Like, there's no security threats. And she's like, what do you expect when you tell the entire press where you live? You're probably the most famous person in the world at this point in the MCU universe, right? I would say there's probably no superhero that's more famous than Tony Stark. And no one that's not a superhero is probably more famous than a superhero. So I would assume that Tony Stark is literally the most famous person on the planet. So the press is going to be there. It's just a funny aspect of it, and kind of talks to what we have been mentioning throughout it, that it's a fun movie and it's kind of doing interesting things throughout it while also telling a compelling story. And I think that it puts us in a really interesting place. We've talked about in the past on this podcast how the kind of formula for storytelling is a lot of times something will be going wrong at the beginning, and then like there'll be some sort of solution, and then things get really bad in act two, and then you have to resolve that for the final act. And this is kind of the, okay, we're in a bad situation in act two, like how are we gonna come out of this? We've talked about how superheroes will get beaten by their opponent in the middle fight a lot of times, like how in our most recent episode with the Avengers, we discussed how Loki tricked them / beat them with Hawkeye /
Flash convincing Hulk to come out and beat them in that middle battle, which directly leads into them beating him in the final battle, which is kind of, like we said, the formula for how a story can be told a lot of times. And I think this is an interesting way to get us into that position for the end of the movie, or the act two portion of the movie, where Tony's presumed dead, downtrodden, and working to get his suit fixed, and in a very unlikely scenario for him, working with a little kid, right, who is not going to be someone who you would expect to not get on Tony's nerves. Like, he's not the guy you would be having babysit your kid, because he's probably going to be, for example, calling him a pussy, which I'll get into because I think it's one of the funniest lines in the whole movie, if not the whole MCU. It's just the funniest situation, I think. I cannot wait to talk about that line. But we'll get to that, obviously, when we get to it. I like all of this to this point. Again, I don't really see why this is, like, so maybe I'm wrong about what I remember people saying, but I feel like people are, like, not liking both Iron Man 2 and 3, but I thought to a more extreme degree it was Iron Man 3 that was the more disliked one, and I'm not seeing anything that would make me think this would be so much less enjoyable than anything else, if even less enjoyable at all, right? I mean, I could definitely mention other movies in the MCU already that I've liked less than this, and that's not, I don't want to get negative and be like, oh, here's, this one's worse, this one's worse, this one, no. I'm just saying that this isn't my least favorite in the franchise so far, and I'm surprised that it had such a negative reaction or lukewarm reaction when it came out and since then, because again, everything so far has been fun, and I'm kind of waiting for the shitty part of it to come, and it feels like it never does.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. This movie's fun, it's like enjoyable, and I agree. Like, I also thought that this was like the least liked of his three movies, so I think you're probably right, Duncan. I mean, not to say that if I think it's right, then clearly it's right, but I think there's some like common sentiment in that. But yeah, this movie's really fun to watch, and I think the scene where, granted, he's like in the middle of an anxiety attack when he's leaving Rhodey, but the fact he just has his suit parked out like a car or like a motorcycle in front of the restaurant, that was just so funny to watch him just hop in it and take off. All these people are crowded around him like it's some Aston Martin or something like crazy like that. To him, it's just another suit because he's made like so many of them at this point, but like everyone's so starstruck by it. And I just think that that's really, really funny to watch. But these scenes are really interesting, and I think they're doing some really cool stuff with them, especially like you said, Andrew, like giving Happy this quest for him to go on to. This is a driving force behind what Tony's about to do, which is going to make the plot progress, et cetera, et cetera. But it also shows the audience a piece of what's actually going down with Extremis. So yeah, I really enjoyed watching that. Didn't like that Happy got hurt, obviously. Love him. I love his little quips throughout the movie. So I wish he had been in it a bit more, but like I totally understand why. Like, he was busy. That's just what they needed to do for this movie. But I think everything that they did to Happy's character in the beginning of the movie, it was enough that I was satisfied with his lack of appearance like later on. But that's just because I enjoy watching him. And yeah, I agree. Like, these action scenes where he's trying to fight these guys and also protect Pepper, they're really, really good. Like, I agree, Andrew, like, they're very memorable for me. Like, I would equate it to when the Hulk is coming out of that glass walkway. Like, this scene sticks with me. Like, this is the one that I remember the most from this movie. I don't know if, again, it's because how many times are people knocking off a house off of a cliff in the middle of this fight? Like, this is on Tony's turf. But yeah, I think this fight scene was great. We get to see Tony sticking up for his woman. Like, he's trying to put her first. Like, he is putting himself second in the situation, which is like a breath of fresh air for someone who's continuously shown that his wants and needs are typically the most important to him versus other things that should be important. Granted, like, he did freaking save the world in Avengers, so like, that's not totally true, but it's nice to see that he has really fallen in love with Pepper, and like, he's putting her above even his own self, which is like a nice turn of events for Tony. But yeah, I enjoyed these scenes. It was really great to watch. Like, he was having to think of things in regards to his environment, like using the piano to attack them. Like, he wasn't just relying completely on his suit, which I think kind of ties into what I was saying earlier about him not being in a suit as much and like him actually having to fight as Tony versus Iron Man. So I think that's really interesting too. And like, I enjoyed them making that choice for this movie, him like actually having to be creative and be this engineer that he is and not just rely on this suit that he's gotten just so comfortable in and relied on so heavily. And I also like the way Maya just kind of shows up. It's just very random. Like, there's no precursor to this. Like, she's just there. And like, we later find out why. Like, it makes total sense now. But once we later find out, she's actually really involved with killing it and everything like that, but it just seemed like too good of a timing. Oh, she just happens to show up when like all of this is going down. Like when I was rewatching it, I had totally forgotten that she was actually involved in it. So I didn't even like signal anything in my brain like, oh, this should be fishy. I wish I had thought about that sooner. But yeah, I mean, I think these scenes are really good and there's a lot of funny stuff that's in them, but there's a lot of like serious character development in these scenes. And I think they're really, really good. After the showdown at Tony's place, we see that he like survives. He shoots off into the sky. I'm not exactly sure where he's going. It goes black. We see Tony waking up in his suit, powering down, and he lands in Tennessee because this is where Jarvis last had his GPS programmed. He's going to a rural part of Tennessee, which is where one of the earlier known attacks happened, but it wasn't like an official attack. It just had a lot of similar characteristics of the attack, the attacks that we now have come to understand as like large in temperature, et cetera, et cetera. He lands there. His suit has no power. He can't get back to California. He eventually takes his suit to this random barn where he meets this kid, befriends the kid, and uses him to maneuver around the town and get insight into what actually went down here. He hijacks this news van's computer so he can figure out more about what's going on. He meets with the dead soldier's mom to get more insight into who he was as a person, what's going down with him. And it turns out she was already going to meet someone to hand over a folder, which is where he encounters Savin and Brandt, who attack him. And shit hits the fan. There's an all-out brawl in the middle of this town. They are eat up with the regenerative power that Extremis is working on. And Tony sees firsthand like what this means for people that are in, I don't want to say infected with it, but who have it in their system. And throughout all of this, though, we also see Rhodey trying to find Mandarin. They're kind of on a wild goose chase. They can't exactly pinpoint his location, but it turns out it was just a way for Killian to steal Iron Patriot's suit for his own personal gain. What do you guys think about this scene of them in Tennessee and the little snippets of Iron Patriot trying to find the Mandarin?
I talk about the Iron Patriot part first. I think this is really funny. It keeps on that sort of, what I've kind of got this idea of a meta commentary that's coming into this movie that's very anti-nationalist point of view, like Duncan was saying. It's got that whole, it's continuing on with that war on terror thing that I was kind of talking about with the Mandarin videos, with the Mandarin broadcast. Brody's just checking out all of these same kind of areas that you'd expect a warlord to be hiding out in the Middle East. It's all that same sort of, it's Pakistan. It's just very funny, as is a wild goose chase. It's really just nonsense. And you have that little bit of where he's infiltrating one of them and Tony calls him. And it's just casual for him because it's just another day in the life of the soldier. I think it's really fun. The Tony stuff landing in Tennessee, this is where it becomes sort of why I think the most Shane Black moment. So you guys were saying that you kind of haven't had that much experience with Shane Black. One of Shane Black's hallmarks is a broken hero. And obviously that's throughout the film. So it's not limited to just this section, but it's kind of where I think it becomes the most Shane Black. So Shane Black deals with broken heroes and these protagonists who are fundamentally damaged, I guess, and dealing with that problem and those internal demons and these internal struggles in a really interesting way. You know, you've got Riggs in Lethal Weapon. Yeah, Riggs. So Mel Gibson's character in Lethal Weapon is very much this. You've got both of the characters in The Nice Guys, both Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling's characters. You've got Robert Downey Jr.'s character in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. They're my main experiences with Shane Black, so I stopped there. Basically, these are characters who have all these internal demons who struggle to deal with them and move past their struggles. And so we get to this part where Tony is completely stripped of his outer shell of his suit. It's just Tony at this kid. And the kid is also another Shane Black hallmark, where we've got this character who is kind of, he's a kid, but he's years beyond what he should be. Like, he should be a kid who's really excited and fun, which he is, but he's also got this world weariness to him. He's kind of a little bit exhausted and a little bit too mature. And you've got Ngori Rice's character in The Nice Guy. So there's your other character who's very similar. So you've got this kind of team up where Tony is ostensibly powerless and he has to find his way through without his suit for the first time in however many years. It's 5 years. So I think this is really fun and interesting where you strip a character down to the bare bones, especially a hero without anything. It's kind of, I kind of think this is Iron Man, Spider-Man 2, where you kind of completely, you need to find a way to make this character find themselves. And in the case of Iron Man, it is completely getting rid of the Iron Man suit, not because he wants to, like Peter Parker does in Iron Man 2, because that's kind of an existential crisis and he makes a choice that he doesn't want to be Spider-Man anymore. You've got Tony having to be stripped of his Iron Man suit and having to find himself again through just being him in this small town, completely devoid of any contact to his world. It's just him and this kid. And I think it's really fun. I think it's really entertaining. Like Duncan said, I think the moment where he calls Ty Simpkins' character a pussy is really funny. And I completely forgot about it. I was on the train watching it last night. And I was like, hang on a second. I thought that was really funny. Again, I think that's a total Shane Black moment. I think that's the most Shane Black moment in terms of the comedy, just pushing it a little bit into his comedy area more so than ever. I think this is so much fun. I think you've got so much interesting character stuff going on while it's still being brilliant entertainment. It's so interesting. You've got a little bit of action in there. You've got a little bit of comedy. You've got this interesting relationship between a man child and a kid who's a bit too mature for his age. It's just an interesting dichotomy to pose Tony with, especially at this particular point where he's struggling and you've just got this annoying kid wanting to know everything. It's basically who he wants to be one day, and he just wants to know everything. I think it's a really interesting setup. It's well executed because it's blast. When Shane Black gets to do his thing, which he really does with this movie, it's so cool. It's so interesting. I love the Tennessee section of this movie.
For the part of the movie when he visits Tennessee, I did enjoy the character development throughout the whole thing. And also, I've enjoyed the interaction between him and Henry. I thought it was a mutually beneficial relationship. The way that Tony was helping Henry like address bullies and trying to encourage him through that, I think that was kind of like a self-talk that he needed to give to himself too. And I would relate his bullies to like his own demons that he's created in his past, as well as future alien threats throughout the MCU. So I like how they were basically helping each other get better. And I did enjoy seeing Tony Stark, you know, which has already happened in the movie, but throughout the movie, not have to rely on his suit and basically kind of show that his superpower is his cleverness as well as his brain, how he's able to like think quick on his feet with scientific matters, like how he'd set one of the extremist agents on fire and caused him to explode through different scenarios, as well as him not having superpowers himself. So it basically gave him reassurance that he can fend for himself without the suit and without Jarvis having to guide him or having that safety net in a way. So I like how they showed that throughout those scenes. And it's also, I don't know if you talked about Gary before, the guy that was in the van helping him out. I just thought that whole scene was funny because at first when I was watching the movie, I see him open a door and I'm like, is that Tony Stark or what? He looked just like him in the sunglasses. So I thought that was hilarious. And it's also refreshing throughout the movie to actually like see a diehard fan of Tony Stark instead of seeing somebody that doesn't like him because of his arrogance or anything like that. So that was nice and refreshing to see somebody look up to him, such as Gary and Henry. And the wild goose chase of Rhodey was pretty substantial, and just the way that he's just like going with the flow, just following orders instead of thinking on his own and end up getting captured. That was very like, I don't want to say typical, but I kind of saw that coming, just like blindly following orders and just going from place to place trying to find the Mandarin.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Andrew, with what you were saying about the Rhodey section being a good example of that commentary on the war on terror and it being very prevalent at that time period. Obviously, not over to this day, but more in the news and more in the thick of the conflict, I would say. Although, again, I'm not saying that it's over by any means, so I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying, well, now we don't have to worry about that anymore, because obviously there's still issues going on with the war on terror and the aftermath of that as well, of a lot of decisions that have been made because of that. So I do think that that's a good assessment of what's going on there, and I think it's well done as well, and I think it's poignant that he ends up being captured as well. I think that's, like both Andrew you mentioned and Jalen you just said as well, alludes to him not thinking for his own, him blindly following orders, him working for the nationalistic machine, basically, and that not working out for him. So I appreciate that part of it. And then for me, I really do like the whole section with the kid, the future most confusing funeral attendee for many people, wondering what was going on in Endgame. Obviously, he shows up there and looks a lot different because of time difference, and they had to like explain that later on to a lot of people. But very cool. And we're obviously getting to the Mandarin reveal, which will be fun. And I have some stuff to talk about with that. But obviously, we brought up the line where he says, no need to be a pussy about it, to the kid. And the kid has just told him that his dad left him a couple years ago. And it's been a while. And this kid is not that old. So the kid was obviously very young when it happened too. So the whole thing is just, I laughed out loud at just the audacity of the movie, Tony, everyone involved. And I'm not saying, oh, wow, how did they let this get in the movie? I'm appalled. I think it's fucking amazing. I love it. I think it's awesome. And there is no shot that a 2022 Marvel movie would ever contain that line. Not even something close to that, in my opinion. And they like to winkingly push boundaries and step on the line a little bit, but it's so sanitized now. It would never be calling a little kid a pussy for his dad leaving him. Which, again, I don't think you should do that in real life. Obviously, I'm not advocating for that, but is it fucking hysterical? And is it very, like I said, nice guys is what I have as my reference point for Shane Black. And as I was writing it down, because again, not only is it my favorite line in the movie, it's one of my favorite MCU lines. And as we go through it, I'm going to try to find one that I like better. But up to this point, definitely my favorite moment in an MCU film. Just again, because of how it stands out, I think, and how it's away from the norm, I guess, in a fun way. In a way where you're like, what did he just say? And it's a superhero saying it, so that's even more fun. But like I said, I don't really have that much of a reference point other than the nice guys for Shane Black. But it did feel very like the nice guys, kind of. And it also, maybe because it felt so un-MCU, but I think for other reasons too, I would have said, without even knowing Shane Black's style, that feels like a Shane Black fingerprint right there. And it's interesting to hear you, Andrew, say that that felt like the most Shane Black line in the movie, because definitely it stuck out to me as something like, oh, I bet this guy who is an auteur, I'll say, he's got his very own creative vision and fingerprint on stuff. And again, I'm saying that not as someone who's an expert in Shane Black films, but from what I've heard and from what Andrew has been telling us today, both the other hosts and the audience, about Shane Black's work, he's someone who, like many other writer directors, sometimes just a director that we've mentioned in the past, have their own styles, which even if it doesn't work for you, I think is always fun. I think it's always good to have a style, even if it's something that is not going to work for everyone, which how could it work for everyone? But I'll, even if it doesn't work for me, advocate for someone who's going for something as opposed to not having a style at all. And I think it's clear that he's got something that makes it his own when he's making a film. And I think that's interesting. And I think that's at least what I define as an auteur, is like a creative who kind of puts his own imprint on it and that you can feel it being from him or her. And that's what it felt like for me in this line. So it's really, like I said, interesting to hear you say that it did feel like the most Shane Black line, because I think from even from someone who doesn't know that much about him as a creative, felt like, oh, this does feel like it's from him. So it's interesting to hear you affirm that. And I also forgot to mention this in the last one, but it's always fun with Maya and Pepper talking. I think is a good example of how it's always fun for Pepper to get to make fun of Tony with anyone, really. But if it's an ex-fling or someone Tony's flirting with at the moment, it's even more interesting, I think, because it just gives a fun dynamic. And her saying, "You dodged a bullet," basically, to the woman, I thought was really fun. I just think that she gets good shots in at Tony, basically. And it's a fun dynamic. And I forgot to mention that before. And I appreciated that. So I just wanted to throw that in here as well.
I agree with everything you guys said. Like, these scenes in Tennessee are definitely some of my favorite ones of this movie. Just seeing Tony interacting with this kid, it's really interesting to watch. Like, I think, I don't know if this was a writing decision because of the dynamic between Tony and his dad, but I feel like it definitely had to have been, like, especially with them throwing in that line, like, Tony had a horrible relationship with his father, and it's almost like Tony's getting to play dad to this kid. So it's like really interesting to watch how he interacts with him. Like, he's very stern with him, but almost fatherly in a way. Like, I don't exactly know if that's what he's going for, but the things that he does for this kid, like, he's almost like giving him confidence in a way. Like, he's telling him that, yeah, this shitty thing happened to you, but like, that shouldn't define you. And I think him kind of building this relationship with him and them working together as a team, it's kind of creating meaning for this kid as he's like so lost right now and so confused by what's happening to his family. And so I think it's really nice and cool of Tony to not only do this, but like, I don't want to talk about like the end of the movie, but like also what he does at the end of the movie. And then like, again, like Duncan, like you said, like in Endgame, it's really interesting to see the side of Tony that we had never seen before, because this is like pretty much our first time seeing Tony interact with any kind of child. So I think it also shows that he could be a good dad one day. And like, I think, I mean, clearly we know that he's going to be a good dad, but I think these scenes are really interesting and like very moving in a way, especially smack dab in the middle of this like superhero movie. I also like that you guys mentioned that Tony's suitless here, so he's completely relying on his brains and just who he is as a person and like almost his own charisma when he's talking with the soldier's mom. Like, these are moments where Tony's just kind of having to play civilian and work his magic just to get some insight as to what's going on. And yes, there's still action in these scenes, but it's not so much that he would die without his suit. So I think these are really cool. Like, they're just quick action scenes without him being on like the brink of death, which I think is really cool to watch. And yeah, I mean, like, overall, I think this is a great sequence of events and it's just really fun to watch and enjoy. Before we see Tony leave Tennessee, we do see that Killian takes Pepper hostage. We also find out that Maya's actually in on this. We really thought she was there on Tony and Pepper's team, but she's not. Tony eventually leaves Tennessee after he finds out the Mandarin is actually located in Miami. So he heads there, suitless, completely reliant on improvised homemade weapons that he just was able to make up on the spot. He finally discovers that the Mandarin is actually an actor, Trevor Slattery, who has absolutely no idea what these videos are being made for. He does not know that he's actually part of a fake terrorist organization. He just thinks that these people are helping him with his drug habits. He's getting paid to chill, live an awesome life. And it turns out that Killian is behind all this stuff. Tony does get captured and he finds out that Pepper has been injected with this extremist that Tony had just found out about while he was in Tennessee. And he's not exactly sure what to do. Brody's captured. He doesn't have a suit. He's just kind of screwed right here. He finds out that Maya's also working with Killian. Eventually, he's able to escape once his suit's powered up and he can use the suit pulling system that he had injected into his arms. And Maya does end up dying because she does have a change of heart and Killian didn't take that well. They're eventually able to escape, Tony and Rhodey, and now they're faced with having to save the president because they stole Rhodey's Iron Patriot suit, so the president's at risk. They try and contact the vice president because he's the one who can get them in direct contact with Air Force One, but it turns out the vice president is in on it with Killian because his granddaughter is missing a leg and would like to be a part of the science that is able to give her a new leg. What do you guys think about this action sequence with Tony fighting everyone without his suit and everything that transpires in Miami?
In some regards, this is possibly my least favorite section of the film. In other regards, I still think it's up there. I don't think it's bad. I think part of it is how wasted Maya Hansen is. You know, she gets killed off in this section and it's a little frustrating because it kind of just wastes all the stuff that the film had been doing thus far with the character, making her such a critical point of contention between Tony and Killian. Part of that is, and I know this from various reports, that Maya Hansen was meant to be pretty much the primary antagonist. And Marvel being Marvel back in those days, it was a toy thing that made her not be the primary antagonist. Apparently, female characters don't sell toys, so yay for that. I think it kind of, yeah, doesn't do her any good to just die like that. I think it's a little frustrating. Apart from that, I think this is the point where we find out the Mandarin's not really the Mandarin. And I think that is the best rug pull Marvel has ever pulled. I said that on Twitter last night. I think that's so funny when Tony comes in expecting to meet this big warlord and it's just some British actor. I think this, Duncan was saying that this movie wasn't very well received. This is part of that. I remember specifically at the time, a lot of people being very angry that the Mandarin was not actually the Mandarin. And I think that's so silly because I think Trevor Slattery is incredible. I think that's an incredible way to deal with a character who had been in the comics. It was just such, it was kind of a racial stereotype for so long.
Yes.
So there was so much controversy, not necessarily around the inclusion of the character, but just around the character in general. I think this is such a clever way to deal with that. Him being just this bumbling actor is so funny. And him being not actually the Mandarin is just such a clever rug pull to play on this movie, especially considering how much of the film's promotion had been based on the fact that they had the Mandarin and they were dealing with the Mandarin. I think it's just so funny. It's so clever. Kingsley is incredible just playing Trevor Slattery. It's so good. The action scene is really fun. I think you've got Tony in a precarious position. I think that's really entertaining. And having to wait for his suit to be fully charged, it's fully charged, and now he's waiting for it to fly all the way from Tennessee is a really clever way to create a problem and deal with it in an interesting way and make it all the more tense. So you're starting to see this. We watch Tony go into a bit of a guerrilla warfare mode for a bit there and actually have to invent other things or build other weapons to deal with the enemies on his way in. And finally, he gets to have his Iron Man back, but it's not because he hasn't been able to do anything without it. It's because he's been able to do so much without it and he got into this position. Now he needs it. It's the perfect point to bring it back in. It's just really nice writing character-wise. And then you've got the Air Force One scene, which I think is also really good. You know, you've got a little bit of the fight with the henchmen. That's fun. But I think the most interesting part of it is Tony having to save all of the people falling from Air Force One. I think that's perfect superhero stuff. I enjoy the action scenes as much as anyone. I enjoy spectacle as much as anyone, but I really like it when superhero movies take the chance to make it about people and make it about saving people. You've got my favorite superhero scene ever is, again, I'm sorry to bring up Spider-Man 2, but the train sequence in Spider-Man 2 and having to stop the train from falling off the tracks. I think that is so incredible. And then you've got that moment of him being brought into the train, but that's another deal. But like you've got, it's very human focused and it's about saving people. And that's exactly what this is here to a degree. Like it's just about saving people and it's not about fighting anyone. It's just, there's a bunch of innocent people. We need to save the day. I think it's just really nice and it's really well executed and it's fun and it's funny, but it's also tense and engaging to watch. It's really cool superhero stuff.
Yeah, during this part of the movie, at the beginning, Maya definitely had me fooled, to be honest. I'm thinking like she, even though like during the flashback, you can see how Tony was treating her and everything and just basically calling her a botanist when she's more than that. And I still didn't see her like betraying them at all. Like I'm thinking like she's there to actually help and like turn on Killian. And also, like Duncan was saying, like seeing her and Pepper talking and everything, I'm thinking that she's actually on their side. So seeing her betray them definitely caught me off guard and surprised me with the rewatch. And I also think that Killian's motives behind why he was evil and why he was going after Tony Stark was somewhat weak. It was just like it, I guess, like how like Tony Stark has a big ego or whatever, it kind of like Tony Stark not wanting to work with him kind of took a shot at his, and that's his motive of becoming evil and everything. Well, I guess that's a good parallel between the two people, but I do still think that was like a weak part of the movie, despite his plan actually being brilliant, trying to control supply and demand through war and have his hand in everyone's pot and manipulate everything. I did think that part of it was brilliant. And as well as using Iron Patriot as a Trojan horse to kill the president and the VP kind of like working with the Mandarin in order to basically make a deal to use the extremists for his daughter. I think that was a good motive from the VP, but I didn't expect that either during the movie. But I did like you were saying about the guerrilla warfare, Tony Stark going in with his own makeshift devices and everything. I thought that was pretty cool, especially with Henry giving him that motivational talk. He's like, you're a mechanic, build something. Like, you can do this. So I enjoyed throughout this whole movie seeing Tony Stark out of his suit using other tactics in order to stay a hero. Basically, he is Iron Man with or without the suit. And I also agree with you, Andrew, saying that Maya was kind of like wasted in a way. I'm like, if you're going to be a villain, stay the villain and do some villainous stuff. I guess like within 20 minutes, she already tried to have a change of heart. And I thought that was kind of like too fast for her to change her mind. And it wasn't enough explanation or motive of why she was trying to backtrack on that soon when she was already that deep in and that far into those situations. And I did enjoy the suspense coupled with humor, Tony Stark waiting for his suit to come from Tennessee, and also seeing him actually get suited up and still remembering that the suit is kind of like damaged still. And I like how they kept bringing that theme up throughout it, him having to charge the suit up, and as well as also seeing the suit as damaged, seeing how much war battle he's been going through with the suit, and also a parallel to him mentally as well, damage in both ways. And the scene where he ended up saving all the civilians was probably one of my favorite scenes during the sequence. And I loved how he referred to basically still trying to make it like funny in the MCU way, like telling them, like, you remember Monkey Barrel, everybody like grabbing each other's hands and everything. I thought that was a unique way in order for him to save them when he could naturally only save three. So that also showed how smart and clever and intelligent Tony Stark is as a hero and human being.
I'm so glad, Andrew, that you went in on the Mandarin being not a bad character and actually being a good portrayal here, because I just could not agree with you more. I've not disagreed with any of your points about the film yet, but this one, absolutely, I'm glad that we're on the same page with it, because I think it works on pretty much every level. And the one complaint I'm okay with, and Kevin Feige's addressed this not only with this character, and I think the real better example would be Tilda Swinton's character in Doctor Strange, but he addressed it with regards to both them, where Marvel's idea behind it was these were characters who were racist stereotypes because they were created at a time when, unfortunately, and I'm not acting like everything's fine now, like there's no racism, but unfortunately, it was just mainstream to write a racist character and everyone was okay with it. And nowadays, you couldn't obviously do that and you wouldn't want people to do that, but I just want to note that I'm not saying that people and Asian Americans and Asians in general don't experience racism to this day, because that's obviously not true. They do experience it still in 2022 and in recent years as well. But I will say, I get the complaint that you can sidestep those racist caricatures and still give it to an Asian actor, which I think is a fine complaint to have. And I'll accept that as an argument against casting Ben Kingsley. And I think even Kevin Feige, he said recently, I think when Shang-Chi came out, that he admits that they maybe didn't go about it in the best way. Yes, you can avoid those and still cast someone who's Asian at the same time. And that would probably be the better way to go about it, sure. But were they actively trying to do the right thing? I think yes. So I understand that they didn't nail it, but I think they were actively trying to do the right thing and just missed the mark by a little bit. So in my point of view, if anything, it's a net wash, I think, because they're intending well, but didn't do it the right way. But not really a negative, right? Because I think the intentions are there. And obviously, intentions don't mean everything. But it's not like, I mean, you can't argue that they're going out of their way to be racist with casting the white guy, I don't think. But maybe you could. So I shouldn't say you can't argue that. But I wouldn't make that argument myself. So that's my first point about it. But also, it's Ben Kingsley. So that's my other point is, once you have, all right, we're going this route with it, it's hard to complain about a performance by Ben Kingsley, who is one of the great talents ever in acting and has, at least from the performances that I've seen, never done anything that I wouldn't call fun in some way, and good in aspects where he's not only just a good actor, but good at, I think, reading the room of the set he's on and knowing what film he's in. And I think that's important too, because there's great actors who are in films who aren't trying to be Oscar winners, for example. And I'm not saying that to shit on like a Marvel movie, for example, but when you're making Iron Man 3, you're not saying, oh, I'm going to win a bunch of awards for this. You're probably having more fun with it. And that's a perfectly fine way to make a film. And it leads to a lot of fun shit. Like, for example, I would say Top Gun Maverick is probably the most recent example of a film that is made for the just pure enjoyment of filmmaking and love for action, right? And I think that this kind of falls in line with that too. And this is like the comedy sense, and Ben Kingsley knows how to nail his comedy as well and be kind of campy in a way too, I think. And it's just great. And on top of that, it's fucking funny, man. Is it not just hysterical? Everything he's talking about, he plays that character so well, you believe he's that guy. And that guy is funny, where he's this bumbling actor who is there for spirits and women, basically, and just for a good time, and he just wants to party, and he has no idea what's going on with Extremis. And it takes Tony like 2 seconds to be like, yeah, this is the wrong guy. So who's the Mandarin actually? Because you're not him. And I love it. I think it's a great dynamic there. It's just a great performance and a really fun character, I think. So honestly, for me, it works so well. And I know I've been ranting about it for probably too long now, but once you brought it up, Andrew, I was like, thank God that we're on the same page with this, because I wanted to bring it up. And I'm so glad that I'm not the only one that thinks it works well. And I think people complained a little bit because they just weren't, I don't want to say ready for it, but reading what they were doing in the right way. I don't think they were being fair with the intentions necessarily. And it's kind of similar to, I think this was probably before we started recording, but we were discussing a little bit of Riverdale before we got into the MCU discussion, and how that show, I think some people who complain about it aren't necessarily understanding what it's trying to do. And that's a little bit of a digression, but I think that's kind of a little bit the same here, where people's complaints about this scene would be exactly what makes it so good for me, I think. So it works for me, and a little bit, I think, continues that commentary we're talking about. It's a false flag. It's started from the US, right? And it's made to look, like we've said, like part of this war on terror. It's specifically got Rhodey investigating in all of the usual suspects by the US government standards. Obviously, I don't mean that to be like, oh, well, you know, those are the bad guys. Not what I'm saying at all. I am not on the side of the war on terror, obviously. But my point is, it's got the US government doing what you would expect them to be doing when anything basically happened during that whole period of 9/11 and Osama bin Laden and stuff like that, where there's been a million jokes about it, where it's like, oh, so those, they were the ones that bombed us? It's like, oh, no, the country that we're at war with right now actually had nothing to do with any of that. It's like, oh, okay, so what are we doing here, right? And again, it's, I think part of that is commentary this year, where it's a literal false flag. So I think that's interesting, and only, in my opinion, ups how good this movie is. Definitely not a detractor, and I honestly don't see how you couldn't see it as a positive, because I think maybe in hindsight people will look back at it and be like, people say revisionist, but I think that has a little bit of a negative connotation, but say, okay, I see what they're trying to do here, maybe in a similar sense to like the prequels and Star Wars, for example, and stuff like that, where you kind of take it more as understanding what the creator was trying to do and what the people involved were trying to do. And again, I think they nail it in this. I really think it works. So it works for me. I like it. And I also almost completely forgot about that monkey barrel scene that you mentioned, Jalen. I was not going to remember to bring that up. I think that's so fun. It's a fun little dilemma with a creative solution, right? It's, how's he going to get out of this? You can only carry 4 of the 11 or 12 of them that they're falling. And then he finds this super creative way to save them. And it's kind of a punchline too, because it's like, remember that game you'd play? It's played a little bit like for laughs too, but it's all just interesting. It's like, how's he going to get out of this? And you can have this movie without that scene very easily. You don't need it whatsoever. It's just extra seasoning almost on the film, I think. It's just an example of a filmmaker having fun with their film. And those, I think, can really show the heart of a film. Scenes like that, that are there because, I don't know why, because I don't want to say like, oh, he put it in the film for this reason, but I think because it's fun and it's interesting. Like, again, it's not really, I don't want to say that it's unnecessary, but you don't need it. Like, you could have this movie completely without that scene. There could just be four guys that he saves, and then you get the same ending, I think, basically. But I think it's just fun stuff. So yeah, this whole part I love.
I love seeing the juxtaposition between the comedy and the action in the scene. Like, Tony walks into Miami and he has bombs within Christmas ornaments. Like, it's Christmas time and he's using what he has around him. And I think that's so inventive, and it's really showing what a brainiac Tony is. And clearly we know what Tony's intelligence is. We don't need any kind of reminders, but it's almost like a nice little taste of how inventive he can be in ways that aren't related to the suit. Because since he's so focused on Iron Man and all the technology around that, we're always just narrowly focused on the next thing that he's doing to the suit. So it's really cool to see him use his brain and his talent and his inventiveness to create these makeshift weapons, since he is lacking a suit at this point. And in the midst of that, it's really funny watching him make these weapons that are just interesting to watch. And then we get thrust into finding out who the quote Mandarin is, and that whole interaction. And Ben Kingsley just slays his character. He's just so funny. I think he really embodies the lost, quirky, floundering guy that he is in this movie. And it's really fun to watch. I do like that Tony gets captured here, as odd as that sounds. Like, I think it's really important for us to have to wait out this moment for his suit. Like, I think Andrew or Duncan, honestly, I don't remember, I apologize, whoever talked about waiting for the suit to power up. I just think that was like a nice, funny element. Like you said, like, he had to do all this stuff without the suit, and then you finally think that he's gonna get it and he just has to wait a little bit longer. And I just think that scene is really funny, while these guards are like just looking at him like, what are you talking about, man? Like, we're gonna kick your ass, like, blah 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 blah. And then finally, after like many little countdowns that he has, it finally clicks and like he's able to get a suit. And I just think that that's so funny. I also kind of agree with what you were saying, Jalen. Like, it did feel kind of like motivationalist with regards to Maya. Like, it just seemed so brief, her part. And also, I don't really understand what was motivating her, really, like, other than her just wanting to get her research out. And like, I know she gives her like brief explanation, but it just didn't feel as fulfilling as Killian's did to me. And like, maybe that's just because they didn't do justice to her character, and like, maybe they just poorly wrote her, and like, maybe that's it. But it just didn't feel as fulfilling as understanding like why Killian is doing what he's doing. And like, maybe that's just them writing like a really shitty female villain, like, I don't know. But because I know like they just have a history of, I mean, we talked about this with like Pepper being poorly written in the first one, and I think they've made up for that since then. But maybe that was it. But I don't think so. I think it was just them not wanting to focus more on her, maybe. I don't know. But I agree with you, Jalen. I think they could have done something more with her character than what they did. I just don't think she was given enough justice, especially knowing what you said, Andrew, like, she was supposed to be the main villain and then they just kind of sidetracked her or whatever. But other than that, like, I think these are really good scenes and they were fun to watch Tony interacting with everyone that's kind of important to him while also being suitless. After they try and save the president and everyone from Air Force One, unfortunately, they're not able to save President Ellis, and they're forced to track down Killian and figure out what's going on with President Ellis. They eventually find out that he is at a damaged oil tanker where he has both President Ellis and Pepper captive. Tony and Rhodey team up together, and Tony goes after Pepper. Rhodey goes after President Ellis in order to try and save both of them. A fight ensues, of course, and eventually Tony has to weaponize all of the Iron Man suits that he has been working on this entire time that he's been an insomniac battling his PTSD. They kick ass. They do their thing. Pepper dies. I'm just kidding. But not actually. Tony does think that she dies. But she comes back to life because of her extremist implantation that Killian has put in her, and she actually ends up saving Tony's life. When it comes down to Tony and Killian facing off, Tony is no match for the pure beast that is Killian, and she gets to step up to the plate and show that she can also take care of Tony. Tony, showing her loyalty to Pepper, then destroys all the Iron Man suits in order to show her that he is dedicated to her and not his work. Slattery and the president get arrested. Happy wakes up. Tony gets his shrapnel removed, and they all live happily ever after. Take me through the scene. What do you guys think? How was this last action sequence?
I used to not hate this sequence, but I didn't love it. I kind of felt it was a bit bland originally. Like, it was fine, but wasn't my favorite. I've kind of come around on it a little bit over the years. I think it's a really interesting way to use the suits, and it kind of has that thematic element of he's built all these suits for so long and he's been working on these suits for so long that he now gets to use them all, but they're all being blown up or destroyed slowly one by one as it happens. And it just kind of is this sort of mix of one of the things that we've been saying throughout the entire podcast is the entire episode is the whole point is that at the beginning of the movie, Tony thinks he's nothing without the suit when he is fundamentally Iron Man. And the fact that he keeps jumping between these suits and keeps letting him be destroyed and just keeps working through each suit and doing different things in and out of suit is just so the perfect embodiment of that. We're watching him use the suits rather than the suits being a full part of him. It's the equipment, not the full embodiment. It's not part and parcel. It's all about him. So I think that's really clever and really interesting. I also think it's a slight way to get around the whole toys thing of, because I have no doubt that the studio was like, you know, especially Marvel at this time, it's like, well, we want a bunch of suits for toys. It's the third film. Let's make a bunch of suits for the toys. It's like, okay, we can do that, but we're just going to blow them up over the course of the third act, if that's cool as well. It's like, yeah, whatever. You do whatever you want as long as there's toys there. It's like, okay, cool. I think that's a really funny way to go around it. I always enjoy watching movies where they clearly go toys, toys, toys. And it's like, okay, fine, but let us do our thing. So I think that's really fun. I really like that Pepper saves Tony in the end. You know, we've been talking about how Tony and Pepper were so about we. It wasn't just Tony and Pepper against each other as a partnership. It's always them together. I think he saves her, she saves him is just such a perfect way to deal with that and to keep that going. Yeah, we were talking about Killian just before. I do think Killian's kind of a weak villain. It's not because of his motivation. I think his motivation is good. I think he's really fun in that regard. I don't know. I find, like, even especially here in the third act, I just kind of find him to be a bit bland, just run of the mill. And Guy Pearce is really fun as him. I love Guy Pearce. I think he's just very standard, and it's no more so than here, where he just becomes your box standard Marvel villain, and he just kind of is. I think that's my biggest critique of this section, the third act. Yeah, he's just kind of there. But everything else I think is great fun. I think Tony getting the shrapnel out is a perfect capping off to his arc over the course of phase one. I know this was initially the end of Robert Downey Jr.'s contract, so they weren't sure whether he was going to be coming back. So they were basically going, this will be the end of Iron Man. If he doesn't re-sign, that's fine. We can basically cap it off here. And I think that's just the perfect sort of ending for him, realizing where he's, the full trajectory of his arc, and coming back around to realizing that he needed to change, and getting the shrapnel out was the last remnants of his past. I think that's really nice.
I don't know if it's just me, but I ate the scene up. I love the whole final fight and action scene, mainly because of the way that Tony used all his suits and how different it was from any other fights before. Basically, his suits working on their own, as well as when Tony was switching between each suit and just like fighting with each one. I thought that was pretty cool, seeing all the suits in action, and the different ways that he created them and the purpose for each one was a little bit different. So I kind of like that a lot, instead of just the standard Iron Man, repulsor beam, blast, punch, stuff like that. So I did like that, and I'm always a big fan of the action scenes. I do agree, I did hate how like fragile his suits were and just kept like getting destroyed throughout the fight, and that did seem like a little reckless on his part, the way that the boat or oil rig was getting destroyed throughout the time, it actually put more people in danger that were up there. But I was definitely worried about Pepper when she fell. At first, when I was watching it, I was like, did she actually die? Because it looked like in The Amazing Spider-Man when Gwen Stacy fell, and the other Spider-Man when MJ fell too, it kind of like resembled that in a way, those type of things. So I was like, it's like a 50-50 chance if she was saved by a suit or like died. Because I kind of like forgot about her actually having the extremis inside of her as well, and that she could survive the fire and everything. So I thought that was a pretty good, like, not jump scare, but surprise that she survived. And I loved the way that she was able to save Tony, because normally he's the one saving her all the time. So it was good for her to kind of like repay the favor and kind of like get her own action scene for once, especially like you were saying earlier, Andrew, that this was kind of like just in case he didn't want to re-sign a contract and be like the final trilogy for Iron Man. So I thought this whole final fight was a good way to end it. And I did love the clean slate protocol that he used in order to destroy all his suits. I thought that was good symbolism, showing that he was completely different, knowing that he is independent of the suits and also starting to walk this new path as a hero. And they also kind of like symbolize him like finally, I guess, like relinquishing everything that he held on from like the battle in New York or any demons that he had in his past. So I thought that was a good symbolism of that. And in the final monologue scene, him comparing his suit to being a cocoon showed him like finally breaking away from that and just growing into like a butterfly and like being a better person and hero in general. So I thought that was definitely a good way to end the movie, as well as getting all the shrapnel out and just growing as a human being.
Not to be a downer, I just think that the worst part of every Iron Man film is the final battle. Not shitting on the final battles, I just am more interested in the rest of the film usually. I'm also just not that into the ending fights in Marvel films in general. A lot of times that's the weaker aspect of their films, and they suffer from having some generic villains as well, which is definitely true. They've gotten better at that, I think, but they do have a good amount of not so interesting villains. Thanos being a good example of the opposite, I think. People latched onto him because I think he was pretty interesting. I do remember being into the multiple suit usage when I was viewing it in theaters, and that still holds up. I think it's a fun thing to do for sure. I like the commentary we made about it being a fun way to sell toys and also just throw them out there in a way, but in a fun way. So I do like that aspect of it. It's just not as interesting to me as the rest of the film. And that's not shitting again on this part of it. It's just more so saying that I'm more interested in the rest of it. So it's fine. It's not awful at all. It's not a huge negative, I don't think. I just don't love it. And it doesn't do for me what the rest of it does. I do like Pepper getting some blood on her hands. I think that's nice. And no spoilers, but I think the way Pepper is handled in the end of this film has some parallels to The Boys season 3, or the first half, or what we're up to so far in The Boys season 3 so far. But stay tuned for the Thursday episode to see maybe what I'm talking about that. I'll reference what I was mentioning here on that episode. But yeah, it's fine for me. It's fine. It's not doing anything crazy, in my opinion. It's not the most interesting aspect of Iron Man. And maybe part of that suffers from, and I shouldn't maybe feel this way, because as we were mentioning, it's not necessarily going to be the midway or early portion of Iron Man's journey. It could be the end of it, because they don't know if he's going to come back at this point. But for me, I view it as I'm not that really concerned about Tony Stark dying in any of these films. And maybe that's dumb of me, but it feels like he's going to prevail. And that might be part of why I'm not that into the third act and the final fight. And it might not even be fair of an opinion for me to have, but I do feel, definitely in hindsight, which is dumb to say because obviously I know he's alive afterwards, having watched the MCU since then, but it's just like, what am I that invested in? Like, he's going to beat what we kind of described as a little bit of a bland villain, and it's going to be a hurrah. I'm more interested in the struggle, I guess, which isn't necessarily a detriment to the film, because maybe that's just the more interesting part of films in general. That might be my point of view on storytelling. So I'm just not that hooked on this ending, nor was I in the first two Iron Man films, honestly. So
sorry, Duncan. I think it's really cool watching them all go ape shit with like all their little pew 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 things. I don't know. I thought it was really I thought it was really fun to watch. It was kind of like fireworks. I mean, I'm not saying they're doing anything crazy, but it was very cool to look at. Like, I liked the CGI and everything they did with that. I think that was really, really cool. That, in addition to the extremist shit that's going on with their bodies, like, I think that's really fun to look at and, like, see them fight each other. I do think it was a little easy. I watched this movie today, so if I remember correctly, it just seemed a little easy of a win. Killian and Tony did have their face off, and Tony struggled with that, but, like, the rest of it just seemed too easy. And granted, like, I'm sure there was, like, 30-1 ratio or something like that. Like, Tony clearly had the upper hand when they were fighting, but I don't know. That's, like, one of my only complaints about the scene, but it was good to watch, and I like that Tony kind of completes his trilogy arc. Like, I know this isn't his final arc, because we don't see that until, like, Endgame, but it almost feels like we could walk away from these movies and feel satisfied with how Tony ended things, like taking out the shrapnel and recognizing that he is Iron Man with or without his suit. I don't know, like, moments like that just make it feel complete in a way. Like, he's, like, finally reached this point where he's confident in himself, he has Pepper, he feels a bit safer in the world, whether that's because he, I don't exactly know where I'm going with this, but it just felt more complete by the end of this movie than I figured it would have. But yeah, I thought it was really fun to watch. I think having Pepper be the badass woman that she is and save Tony was awesome. I love when shit like that happens. I love seeing women in really powerful roles. It's nice to watch, especially, like, growing up and not having a lot of women like that to look up to, just because, especially in superhero movies, it's always the men who are prioritized and they're the ones who are, like, really saving the day. So, like, to see Pepper save Tony was just, like, really cool to me growing up. I was, like, 15 and I was like, yeah, like, let's go, like, woohoo. And even now, like, it really is nice to see that stuff. And yeah, I enjoyed this scene. I do agree though with you, Duncan, that I do think sometimes the final scenes are a bit lacking in Iron Man movies and just, like, MCU movies in general. I do think, like, this was probably one of the better ones, in my opinion. But yeah, I thought these last few sequences were really, really good. After that, the credits roll and we get the post-credit scene with Tony talking to Bruce Banner, which leads the audience to realize that at the very beginning when he's talking and his suits are blowing up, that he was actually talking to Bruce. What did you guys think about this post-credit scene? Was it cool? Was it just there? What are your thoughts?
It's fine. Yeah, don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's good. I think it's kind of funny. I don't think you need a reason for narration in a film outside of whether the narration adds anything to the texture of the film, which it does. I think it's just kind of a funny button to push at the end. Like, yeah, here you go. It's just a silly conversation that Tony's having with Bruce. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I also agree with that somewhat. I think that it was just like a nice post-credit scene to have. The part that I liked the most about it was kind of like how it kind of like, I think I probably said this before, like during the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie, Tony Stark is having that monologue and it kind of like shows how he was talking to Banner this whole time, recapping everything in a way. So that's the part that I like about that. If you just think about the beginning and end, think of the whole movie as him talking to Banner, I thought that was just a pretty cool take to have for that post-credit scene. It didn't like foreshadow anything or give any more closure to the movie, so I can see how people would think it didn't add much. It was just like a fun aspect or a viewpoint to have.
Yeah, I think that Marvel is fine with some of their end credit scenes being substantial, like we saw at the end of Avengers, which obviously set up what we were getting very far down the line. And also having ones like Spider-Man Far From Home, for example, with Captain America talking about waiting for something for a very long time and getting nothing. And obviously, farther down the line, they're going to lean more into the BS type post-credit scenes. And I say BS in a loving way, because I like the ones where people groan at and they're like, oh, I waited for that. I'm like, oh, fuck you. Don't wait then. You know what I mean? No one's forcing you to wait. I don't mind them making me stick around for Captain America to say some nonsense and make a joke base with it. I'm fine with that. I loved the Sam Raimi one. And I think that anyone who's a Sam Raimi fan was definitely a fan of that. I saw something that was like, you either loved one of them or the other. And I mean, I personally thought they were both interesting because I'm just down to see where they go with the MCU. I had no idea who, spoiler spoiler alert, obviously we have that big spoiler at the beginning. Charlize Theron was playing. I didn't know what that character was supposed to be, but I was like, sure, let's figure out what they're going to do to fix that incursion. And I thought that also added, I know I'm going on such a tangent right now talking about the Doctor Strange post-credit scene or mid-credit scene, but I liked that they were talking about how they were going to fix the incursion, and that kind of like talked about whenever you have a superhero wipe out an entire population of a planet, you kind of want to find a way to solve that and not have that on his record, kind of. But I thought that was interesting in that mid-credit scene. But my whole point is that these ones are fine with me. I do like what, Jalen, you were saying about it kind of adding context to the voiceover that I lovingly made fun of in my opening hello to you guys, because it did seem, on this rewatch, I did not remember it, and I was like, oh, we're doing a voiceover at the beginning. I was like, eh, and it obviously continues throughout it, and I think this adds more context to it and makes it better in hindsight for the rest of the movie. So I like that you brought that up, Jalen. But it's not substantial, like we were saying. It's not groundbreaking or moving the MCU forward in a million ways, but it does maybe feel like a Shane Black take on the end credit scene, in the sense, not that I know his style, because obviously I've said that I don't necessarily know exactly what his style is, although Andrew was nice enough to go into depth about some of what that includes in this conversation. But it feels like, in the same way that Sam Raimi was using Bruce Campbell in his post-credit scene, it seems kind of like I said earlier, an auteur just doing whatever they want with their end credit scene, and Marvel being like, well, we don't have anything important to put here, but they're kind of expecting it at this point, which is kind of what Marvel's got them into. They just kind of have to do it at the end of every movie, no matter if they have something to show you or not. And I think that that's fine, because it leads to some fun stuff, which people complain about, but I like. So all in all, not the most groundbreaking end scene, but still fun. And I think that's, again, like I said earlier, the most important part of a superhero movie. And for me, it's just doing fun stuff. So more of different characters. I told you I'm a sucker for that. So seeing Hulk is fun.
Do I think this was the best post-credit scene I've ever seen? Absolutely not. Do I think it was horrible? No, it was just there. Like you said, Duncan, it was fun. I liked that we got to see Bruce Banner. Like, that was just a nice little treat to the audience. You can have a little treat. And that's what it was. It was fun. It was cute. I liked that they completed his little monologue and that he was seeing Bruce as his therapist, which is nice because, like, he's seeking help. It's a little misguided because that's not Bruce's specialty, but it was just cute that he was going to someone that he trusted to discuss his PTSD and his anxiety attacks. And, like, granted, Bruce also wasn't really listening. He said he, like, checked out after Switzerland, so, like, he pretty much missed the entire story. But I thought it was really cute and a nice way to remind the audience of his connections and his friends outside of just his, like, Iron Man universe. Okay, that was the end of our discussion on Iron Man 3. Now it's time for our final thoughts and ratings. Andrew, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I love this movie. Like a lot of Marvel movies, I don't pretend it's, like, perfect, but there's just so much I love about it. I think there's so much fun about it. It's so much of Shane Black's sensibilities, and we didn't really talk about it, but I think Robert Downey Jr.'s quippiness is just pure Shane Black, and I think Marvel has been chasing that energy ever since and has never met it as well as they have done here, just because Shane Black is incredible at it, and Robert Downey Jr. and Shane Black have such a good relationship, clearly, and have share so many sensibilities that their comedy works so well together. And I think the peak of that was the calling the kid a pussy line that we talked about earlier. I think the action's really fun. I think it's just thematically really interesting. And as we've talked about, it's that perfect cap on Tony Stark's storyline, whether or not it would go further at the time was in the air, and there's further stories to be told in the end, which is partially, not to get off track, but like partially one of the reasons why I find Age of Ultron a little bit frustrating, because I think it kind of retreads this ground a little bit too much. But that's, by the by, that's another film. I think this film just deals with Tony and his mental health and his ego so well and so interestingly and in a really fun way. So yeah, I adore this movie. Rating wise, I give it, let's have 100. 95 Iron Man suits out of 100.
Jalen?
Yeah, after rewatching this movie, I realized how much I like this movie a lot. I loved how they portrayed Tony's mental health, as well as how this movie facilitated his character growth and his arc as a whole. And this movie in general just made me like Tony Stark a lot more as a character. And the action scenes were really good, as well as the humor throughout the movie. It wasn't too humorous. It wasn't too serious. It was a good MCU mixture in my mind. And I liked how this movie kind of like continued the aftermath of the Avengers movie with Tony Stark, and showed how Tony Stark changed from Iron Man 1 through each movie. And the flashback at the beginning was really good to me as well. As well as if I think about it as this being the final Iron Man movie, it was a really good movie if it was one, even though we already know he shows up in multiple more movies throughout the MCU. But as a whole, I really enjoyed this film. And for a rating, I will give this movie 85 botanists out of 100.
Duncan?
Damn, Jalen embracing Tony Stark's misogyny. He hates it. I have said it throughout this film. I think this is definitely underappreciated, and I'm surprised, especially on this rewatch, that it's disliked as much as it was, or was at the time. I don't know if people, like I said, will reevaluate it at any point, but I think they should. It's definitely not one of the worst MCU films like people say it is, and not bad, I don't think, at all, by any stretch of the imagination. So in my opinion, it deserves to be regarded in better esteem. But people like what they like. You're allowed to dislike this film for sure. I don't see the complaints being something that I agree with. Like I said, the Mandarin works for me. Ben Kingsley nails it. I like Iron Man as a character, and I like Tony Stark, and I think this continues the story and does a good job of being that same character that we've grown to know. And I think it's important. You don't want him to feel like a different character in each film. You gotta feel like you're working with the same guy. And I think this film does a good job of understanding who Tony Stark is. So we've talked about it. I like everything in it. I'm gonna give it 83 Iron Patriots out of 100.
In a sweet turn of events, Chris is here. He's here to give us his final thoughts and ratings on Iron Man 3. Chris?
What's up, y'all? Thanks for letting me jump in. Yeah, I gotta agree with Andrew. I love this movie. There's a lot to like. I was shocked by how funny it was on this rewatch. It's like got a lot of heart, and I love this portrayal. Like you guys, I've shat on Tony Stark pretty much every chance I've gotten on this podcast, but like this movie kind of redefined how I looked at the character. And I think they just do a really good job, like going straight from the events of the Avengers and like showing how that impacts Tony Stark, who like is at the end of the day just a guy around all these other superheroes, and showing how he was affected by those events. You know, I love the mental health side of it, and like how they take a look at that and what he goes through after the battle. Feels like, I don't know if you guys talked about it, but it feels like they kind of just glossed over that piece, like how he comes to deal with it. But I think it's not perfect, but they just do a good job. And I love, you know, the action scenes, like showing that he's more than just the suit. You know, like Tony Stark is kind of a badass for all his faults. And the subversion with the Mandarin was great. It was pretty hilarious. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like in this movie. So me personally, I'm going to have to give it 94.5 concealed security badges out of 100.
That's a great unit.
Thank you.
Last but not least, me. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fun to watch. Again, I didn't remember enjoying it so much as when I watched it the first time, or like the time after that, et cetera, et cetera. And it's fun. I think there's really good action sequences. The character interactions are really fun to watch. The comedy is great. It's perfectly delivered. It's not too much. It's not too little where it like falls flat. And I think it's just a generally good movie. I think Robert Downey Jr., as always, kills it. Ben Kingsley, super funny, and like the limited scenes that we do get with him, I think he plays Trevor really well. I think Guy Pearce does a good job playing Killian. He's like the perfect amount of evil in an attractive body. You know, like there's just something about, you can't be too attractive and too bad. Like, I don't know. Like whenever that happens in movies, it just doesn't work. Anyway, I think it was good to watch. I recommend it to anyone who is looking to rewatch a movie in the MCU. And my overall rating is going to be 93 Christmas ornament bombs out of 100. Thank you, Andrew, for your time. It was great getting to hear your thoughts and opinions on the movie. Remember, you can catch Andrew's writings on films at NovaStream, the website, and on Twitter at AndrewFilms15. That wraps up the show. Thank you to our listeners for making it this far. Thank you to our returning listeners as well as to our new listeners. We hope you enjoyed it and will stick around. Other than a brief hiatus from Monday episodes, we have 4 episodes a week releasing on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Our next episode releases on Thursday, where we will be discussing The Boys up to the most recent episode, Herogasm. Stay tuned for all our future episodes and check out our back catalog of episodes as well. Remember, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching the letters GDT. We're available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on all the free platforms as well. Be sure to subscribe to us and also leave a 5-star review if you can. You can keep track of all of our episodes there, and you can also check us out on our social media platforms to stay up to date. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Good Day to Pod and on Facebook at GDT Podcast. That's all for this week. See you later.
Thanks for listening.
Keep coming, y'all.
Thanks for listening, y'all. We will talk to you again on Thursday.
Catch you guys later.